The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this morning I thought about talking about why we practice, why we do this exploration of being in the present moment. You know, on the surface of it, perhaps it seems like, you know, what's the point of this practice of coming back to our body and our mind? Why? What does it have to do with anything, this exploration of learning how to be in this present moment? The present moment seems like such a small part of our experience. There's so much about the past and the future, you know, so much our plans, our future thoughts about what we're going to be doing and how our past impacts that. It seems like the present moment is just this little blip. Why do we focus so much on this in meditation, and what's the point? When we actually start to look at this, you know, actually come into the present moment and start exploring what's happening here, we really do begin to recognize that this is it. This is all we have. This moment is all we can experience. Our thoughts of the past are constructions of our mind in the present moment. We're remembering something that happened long ago, but that remembering is happening right now. Thoughts of the future are constructions of the mind that are happening in the present moment. Plans, ideas, it's all a construction of the present mind happening right now. The present moment is all we have. It's it. And so, if we aren't available for it, we aren't here. Basically, we're living in a kind of a bubble of mind construction and unaware that we're living in a bubble of mind construction. We're living in our fantasies of the future and our recollections of the past and unaware that that's how we're navigating it. And every once in a while, we come up for air in the present moment, and all of those plans and memories are kind of right there, and however we are in the present moment as we become aware is completely conditioned by the momentum of our reactivity to the past, our anxieties, worries about the future. And so if we aren't exploring being present in the present moment, we are essentially allowing our habits, our patterns, our conditioning to decide how we are going to be in the present moment and going forward. And so really, the present moment is the only place we can experience anything. And it's also the only place where we can choose. The only place where there's a moment of possibility of having agency to how response happens in the present moment. Does response happen based on conditioning, based on patterns and habits of aversion or greed or confusion? Or is there the possibility with mindfulness? With mindfulness, there's the possibility of wisdom, of love, of kindness, of generosity to be available to meet this moment. And so much of the time we are spending our present moment lost in thoughts of past or future and unaware that that's what's happening. And so this turning towards the present moment, we start to become aware of the momentum of our lives. And often, as we do that, You know, in the guided meditation, I was saying, you know, we can become available for this flow of life. And it sounds so wonderful in the abstract. You know, oh yeah, I want to be here for this flow of life. But when we actually open to the flow of life in the present moment, a lot of what we get to see is the habits of conditioning that have kind of brought us here. And sometimes it doesn't feel very good. You know, we open to what's going on and there's this grinchy pattern of aversion that's been churning for the last 3 days, and we wake up, it's like, oh, that grinchy pattern of aversion, that's what's here now, and boy, that doesn't feel very good. It hurts to feel that. Why would I want to be available for that? So this is kind of our usual way of dealing with the present moment. Why would I want to be available? I want to be available when it's pleasant, but if it's not pleasant, forget about it. So I was just looking through my folder of poems and quotes and cartoons and things and found a selection of things to share with you this morning. I have more than usual. I have a stack of things to share with you. So this is a comic from Pearls Before Swine. This is the rat and the pig that are in existential crisis often. And so Rat is writing a letter at a desk. Dear life, I am writing to you to express my dissatisfaction. First, I didn't ask to be here. You put me here. That started us off on a bad foot. Given that rocky start, I'd think you'd strive to be a good host. But no, you fill this place with unpleasantness and surprises. As if that's not enough, at some point I apparently cease to exist in a manner that is most likely shocking, painful, and tragic. Can you say rip off? Please provide a refund. Pig comes up and Rat turns to Pig and says, where does one send one of these? Now, this is our dilemma. When we turn to the present moment, it often feels like bad news. There's pain, there's anxiety, there's confusion, there's frustration. Why would we want to be present for this? This was my question too when I first started this practice. And I think some of us, many of us perhaps, come to this practice because we are struggling with our lives. You know, we hear, this might help. This practice of mindfulness, this practice of meditation might help you to work with your struggles in your life. And I had pretty much hit bottom, and a friend had sent me a book on meditation and mindfulness. And I was really struggling with my anger at that point, and kind of had hit bottom and was really feeling frozen and in despair and in rage, you know, kind of alternating between these states. And a friend sent me a book on mindfulness, and I didn't understand a lot of it, but one little piece I got out of it was, well, try being aware of the anger, you know, try being aware of what's so difficult for you rather than acting on it. And my initial response to that suggestion is, why would I want to be aware of my anger? What good is that going to do? Isn't that going to make me more angry if I just am aware of my anger? But having hit bottom, I decided to give it a try because I had tried everything I could think of to be happy and ended up in this place where I was just caught and struggling. And so I thought, well, I don't see how it works, but I guess I'll try. I'll give it a try. And so turning towards that experience, this is, you know, be aware of the dukkha, be aware of the suffering. The dukkha is a Pali word for struggle, for suffering, for stress, for dissatisfaction, for unsatisfactoriness. Being aware of that in the present moment. And the piece around it, though, it's not just like be aware of it, but see if you can be aware of it and not act on it. See if you can be aware of it and just open to what that is like. What is it like to be a human being that's experiencing that difficulty? rather than feeling like you have to do something about it in that moment. So it's basically opening to this moment of experience, what's already happening in this moment. What is that like? What is it like to bring our attention to that challenge? And, you know, the first time I tried this, it's like, wow, that doesn't feel very good. Anger doesn't feel very good. And yet what had been happening, I was frozen. I was unable to think really. I was just like in a rage. And as soon as I became mindful, this is the very first time I became mindful consciously with a kind of a movement towards, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try being mindful. The very first time I became mindful in that intention of I'm going to be mindful of that difficult state of mind, I was fully in a rage, fully caught, and in that moment it's like, I'm angry. Wow, this hurts, and what on earth do I do with this? Those were the thoughts that came into my mind. And having had very little instruction other than this book, I was like, well, I don't know what I do. I guess I go back to work. And in retrospect, that moment of mindfulness is what actually broke the frozen anger and allowed me to go back to work. Because I was no longer fueling, no longer kind of caught in the loop of that reactivity, having it spin out. And this is why it is useful to become aware of what's painful in the present moment. Because without mindfulness, when we are experiencing painful things, our habits of how we deal with painful things are what's going to be making the choices for us in that moment. And if we open to, a different way, being aware of it, there's the possibility for something new to happen, rather than our habitual tendencies. My habitual tendency with anger was to keep being angry, to feel somehow like if I think about this long enough, or if I figure out how to make that person suffer, or that person, you know just how angry I am at them, all happening in my mind. If I continue that way, that's somehow going to make me happy. You know, our habits and our patterns are the ways that we've responded to life in the past, they're basically trying to help us to find our way in the world. But they're informed by a lot of confusion. They were formed at a time of our lives when we didn't have a lot of wisdom. You know, we were in a mode of just responding and reacting to the world as it came at us, witnessing how our parents responded to the world, how other children respond, just witnessing kind of the ways that people respond. And our patterns were formed based on that. And so it's not like we're personally failing because we're responding in these ways. It's very natural. But when we can turn to the present moment, there's a possibility for something new to happen. Turn to the present moment with this understanding of, let me just see, what is this present moment like? Mindfulness, mindfulness itself is a kind of a neutral thing in a way, just becoming aware of what's happening. You know, if you see somebody on the street and they're angry and you go up to them and say, are you aware that you're angry? They're going to look at you like you're nuts. Like, of course I know I'm angry. But, the way that they know they're angry is not with the understanding, it's useful to experience this and be with this in the present moment. The way they're with their anger is it's useful to figure out how to get rid of this, to figure out who I need to fix or change or control the environment. And so our usual way of dealing with this is to see, can we change the world, to use this kind of sense of becoming aware that we're angry to try to figure out how to fix the world or fix other people, instead of turning towards what is this experience like? What does it feel like to be a human being having this experience? So that's the key with what we can call wise mindfulness, right mindfulness. This is the kind of mindfulness that helps to cut those habits, cut those patterns from just continuing. I'll share another poem. Which one should I share? I'll share this one. So, this is a Billy Collins poem. And it kind of points to that moment of possible transformation where we're caught in some kind of reactivity and then see, oh, this is just what's happening right now, and how that transforms that moment of experience. The title of the poem is Another Reason Why I Don't Keep a Gun in the House. The neighbor's dog will not stop barking. He's barking the same high, rhythmic bark that he barks every time they leave the house. They must switch him on their way out. The neighbor's dog will not stop barking. I close all the windows in the house and put on a Beethoven symphony full blast. But I can still hear him muffled under the music, barking, barking, barking. And now I can see him sitting in the orchestra, his head raised confidently, as if Beethoven had included a part for a barking dog. When the record finally ends, he is still barking, sitting there in the oboe section, barking, his eyes fixed on the conductor who is entreating him with his baton, while the other musicians listen in respectful silence to the famous barking dog solo, that endless coda that first established Beethoven as an innovative genius. The possibility of entering into the present moment. This is what's happening. The dog is barking. You know, this idea, you know, so much of the suffering that happens in the present moment is not about what's happening out there. The dog is barking. We think that's the problem. The dog is barking. But the problem is really our relationship to it in our minds. We feel like the neighbor shouldn't have a dog that barks, or they shouldn't switch him on their way out, or they should put a muzzle on him on their way out, or something, or whatever we think. And so we go outwardly to, how do I fix this? How do I change this? As opposed to recognizing this is what's happening. The neighbor's dog is barking. What does it mean to not resist the truth of a barking dog? To not have that contraction that this is not okay. The contraction that this is not okay is the reason we are suffering. It's not the dog barking that's the reason we're suffering. It's the contraction. And this is another reason why it is so helpful to open to the present moment. Because we start to see, in moments like this, we can start to see, actually, it's not the barking dog. It's that resistance. That's the painful part. And actually, the sound of the dog is just the sound of the dog, and may even be amazing with the right state of mind. There have been times on long retreat mostly where this kind of thing happens. We hear a lawnmower and it's like the most amazing thing. Or we hear these, at IMS, I was just spending the 6 weeks at IMS and they just turned the radiators on a few weeks ago and the radiators make these pinging sounds. And there have been times sitting in that room with the pinging sounds, it's just like the most beautiful, like ping. And if you're available for it, and not feeling like, why did they have those radiators that make so much noise? It's just another experience and can be beautiful, even pleasant. And so this again, you know, opening to the present moment shows us that much I would say not all unpleasant experience is created in our minds. I mean, there's objective unpleasant experience. Like we cut ourselves with a knife, we fall down and hurt our knees. That's, you know, the body is designed to feel pain. It's going to feel pain from that. So unpleasant experience is not, a construction of our minds. Well, actually, it is. It's a unpleasant experience is really a mental phenomenon also. But it's like even the Buddha felt pain, the pain of his bad back. So there's not that, you know, that idea that, you know, if I have no reactivity, then I'll only experience pleasant thing. That's not the way it is. But the recognition that so much of what's difficult for us comes from how we relate to experience. The resistance to our experience is a large part of what the pain is of that. The wanting to have something that we don't have is a large part of it. Is the wanting is the dissatisfaction. It's not that we don't have the thing. It's the wanting itself that is the dissatisfaction. The feeling of offness about not having something is the wanting. When the wanting goes away, that feeling of offness goes away. So we turn to the present moment and we start to recognize how the mind habitually has learned, basically, to respond to the present moment thinking it's going to do something for us. Oh, if I get rid of this, this moment feels really bad. This is really unpleasant. If I get rid of this, then maybe in 5 minutes I'll feel good. So our whole patterning around meeting the present moment of keeping things we like, of getting rid of things we don't like, is a strategy that isn't designed to actually make us feel good right now, but sometime in the future. And so we are kind of giving over because we don't recognize that in this moment the aversion is actually painful. The wanting is actually painful. We don't recognize that, and we are willing, because of the kind of delusive nature of those states, to give over happiness here and now for some possible moment of happiness in the future. And as we make that exploration with our habits, like, oh, I think I'll get these things that I want, get rid of these things that we don't want. We're basically practicing greed and aversion. And one of the kind of ways our mind works, one of the famous sayings of the Buddha, whatever we frequently ponder, that becomes the inclination of our minds. And certainly neuroscience confirms this also. That if we practice, if we engage over and over again with a pattern of aversion or anger, that is what we are strengthening and what we will experience more of in our lives. If we are practicing, cultivating, wanting to have things to be this way, that wanting is what we are cultivating, and that's more of what we'll experience in the future. We may get a brief moment of having controlled the environment, of having gotten rid of something that we wanted or gotten something that we wanted, gotten rid of something we didn't want and gotten something that we wanted. We may have a brief moment of happiness around that, because when we do have a moment where we get what we want, there's a kind of a satisfaction in that. Part of the satisfaction is that we've got something pleasant or we've gotten rid of something unpleasant. But most of the feeling of happiness in that moment is because the aversion has gone away for a moment and the wanting has gone away for a moment. And yet because we've practiced that aversion and we've practiced that wanting, in the future moments, well, we've gotten a moment, a split second of, that feels good to feel like I was in control. That feels good to get what I want. And because that's the only way we know how to be happy, we have a moment of feeling good, and then we The last time we felt good was when we either got rid of something we wanted or got something we wanted, and so we start looking. Where's the next thing I can get rid of? Where's the next thing I can want? Our habits keep us tied to this cycle. And the mindfulness in the present moment can help us to break this cycle. And yet, in that moment of waking up, what we do get to experience is, wow, aversion is happening right now. That doesn't feel good. Huh, greed is happening right now. That doesn't feel good. And so there's a beginning. We have to learn how to trust the mindfulness, to trust that this is useful. And it actually doesn't take very long to get this message. In my early days of practice, the first few months of practice, that first moment of noticing, that one I just described of noticing, I was angry. I didn't quite get the benefit of it in that moment. I didn't understand it. I just kind of like, well, I don't know what to do with this. I guess I go on with work. The benefit of it didn't point itself out to me in that moment. Only subsequently did I understand that there was a benefit of mindfulness in that moment, only in reflecting back on it. But as I began to keep doing this over the course of weeks, I did see there was a benefit, not in a momentary way, but just like recognizing that, wow, somehow this awareness of this pattern is helping it from like escalate. And so I found I was no longer in the frozen state. It became much more like a normal person's anger. It wasn't enrage, it was more like, oh yeah, this is anger. Wow, you know, that still doesn't feel good, but it's nowhere near as painful as that first one was. And so there was a benefit being shown. And I was conscious of that benefit as it happened over the course of the first few weeks. Conscious that, oh, this does seem to be helping. I'm no longer so ruled by that anger. I'm no longer finding myself frozen at the computer. So there was the understanding of the benefit. And so the benefit begins to point itself out to us. We start to see that as we become mindful of those difficult states, as we can actually open to this, like, oh, whew, here's this state that's arising. Like we see that our reactive emotions in particular kind of have a wave-like quality to them. They come and they go. If we're not feeding them, if we don't have our foot on the gas pedal fueling it with thoughts about why we should be more angry and why that person shouldn't do that, that's essentially got the foot on the gas pedal about that reactive emotion. When we become mindful, it's like we take our foot off the gas pedal and there's still a momentum behind that pattern. But we're no longer fueling it, and so it will wind down. And so we can see that. We can see, oh, whew, there it is. You know, grief, oh, whew, there's grief. Oh, there's frustration. Oh, there's impatience. We can see these in a moment, and then watch them kind of fade, and then we're no longer driven by those patterns. There's the possibility for wisdom to make choices for us in the present moment. There's another poem about the value, the benefit. This is of meeting our challenges. This is from Rilke. Someday, emerging at last from the violent insight, let me sing out jubilation and praise to assenting angels. Let not even one of the clearly struck hammers of my heart fail to sound because of a slack or doubtful or broken string. Let my joyfully streaming face make me more radiant. Let my hidden weeping arise and blossom. How dear will you be to me then, you nights of anguish? Why didn't I kneel more deeply to accept you, inconsolable sisters, and surrendering, lose myself in your loosened hair? How we squander our hours of pain, how we gaze beyond them into the bitter duration to see if they have an end, though they are really our winter enduring foliage, our dark evergreen, one season in our inner year, not only a season in time, but our place and settlement, foundation and soil and home. So this speaks to how opening to our suffering basically allows for a transformation to happen around it. As we begin to have the trust to turn to the present moment, to meet the struggles, and to meet the beauty of the present moment, because it's not always painful. That other, there's definitely times when we're taking a walk, or you know, more times than I ever used to experience. I mean, my mind had such a pattern of aversion. It was really caught in that mode of aversion, and it didn't experience much in the way of delight and joy. And so, you know, as I began turning to the present moment and recognizing, oh, wow, you know, this aversion isn't always there, and trusting, you know, at first it's like, well, you know, well, I'm not averse right now, or I'm not angry right now, or I'm not miserable right now, but I know that really what I am is miserable, and just basically making myself miserable, thinking of myself as miserable. But when the mind began to recognize, oh, this is what's happening right now, it's not miserable. Able to, oh, I'm looking at a tree, it's a beautiful day, there's the feeling of breeze on my skin. Able to be available for just simple moments of life. How amazing that is. We miss these moments, these simple moments, because we're so busy trying to figure out how to get what we want and get rid of what we don't want. We're so busy worrying that we're not going to get what we want, or that we're not going to be able to control our experience. Or we're so busy identified with being something, like me, identified with being miserable, that we completely miss that we're not miserable. So we can begin to, in the present moment, wake up to, wow, some of these patterns, they're not always there. And wow, it actually feels pretty good to be walking down the street and just seeing the trees and feeling the sunshine, hearing the sounds. You know, the kind of neutral everyday experiences often are missed because we're so busy turning in our minds. And so the present moment can also begin to be a place of beauty and refuge and delight. And as our mindfulness gets stronger, there's a kind of a continuity. We have some access to mindfulness over time. There's also states that happen in the meditation. The openness to being in the present moment, moment after moment, creates the conditions for the mind to settle and stabilize, creates the conditions for concentration to be here. And concentration in its definition, the mind that's concentrated is settled, is stable, is available in the present moment to be with experience in the present moment. That mind, when it's available in that way, is not experiencing greed or aversion, or it's not experiencing sense desire or ill will. It's not experiencing doubt. It's not experiencing restlessness. It's not experiencing dullness. The mind of concentration is free from many, many of the reactive states that we often live our lives with. And it feels really good to have that possibility. The concentration itself, the settledness of the mind on one object, one experience, can bring not only the absence of the hindrances, which itself feels really good, it's got a name, it's called the bliss of seclusion. The bliss of not having the hindrances, the usual reactivity of our lives pounding at us. we're secluded from that with concentration. And also concentration brings delightful states of joy, of peace, of rapture, of pleasantness in the body, just because the mind is settling in to present moment experience. And so this experience begins to, and this is only possible in the present moment. We do not get concentrated when we're thinking about past and future. So this possibility of opening to concentration only happens when we trust in moment after moment meeting the present moment. And as that concentration begins to stabilize and we feel the patterns and habits of reactivity not there, we begin to see how optional they are. You know, that they're not a necessary way to be in this mind and body. That's a revelation. It's a revelation to recognize, oh, those patterns, those habits, they're not actually required to be human. And as we more enter to that place of stability of mind, there's a stability that can come with just like being with just one experience, like the breath. But there's also a stability that comes with the willingness to just meet this flow of experience. Just be there for what's challenging, what's difficult, and what's pleasant and beautiful. There's a kind of an intimacy that begins to be experienced, that there's a, you know, we all, I think one of the deep patterns of our growing up is that we want to be seen, we want to be reflected, we want to be met. And mindfulness in the present moment of what's happening is one of the most intimate ways to be met. We think, growing up, that we have to be met by somebody else. And I think as human beings, we do need to be met by others. As children, we need to be met by others, or we won't grow up to be functioning human beings. So there needs to be a reflection back of what it means to be human. And yet, as we become functioning adults, we still are looking outwardly for that kind of mirroring or that being seen. And we miss that there's so much of it that's available here. That mindfulness, there's an intimacy with our experience as we open to, oh, this is what, wow. This is what it's like to be sad. Oh, wow. You know, so often we want somebody to see us in our challenging times. We can do this for ourselves. And there's a paradoxical thing that happens as we have that stability to meet what's difficult and what's beautiful with mindfulness, that we... It's like we're experiencing that sadness, and at the same time we're experiencing love and compassion. So there's not a separation there. Or we're experiencing frustration, and we're recognizing, oh yeah, and that's really hard. So there's a compassion, an open heart around it. And so in the present moment, we are also cultivating, as we bring our mindful attention to what's happening, we're not only cultivating the conditions for those states to be kind of released, but we're also actively cultivating beautiful qualities of mind, love, compassion, joy, balance of mind, non-reactivity of mind. And we begin to experience those in the present moment as well. And so we find that this present moment, even when it's difficult, the first few times I recognized, you know, the seeing of something challenging and felt the joy of the seeing of it, oh, there's frustration arising right now, and wow, I'm able to see that and not be reactive. The joy of that I was like, wow, I almost felt a little bit like, you know, it's like, is that possible that I can be happy while seeing frustration? Is that possible? Yes, it's possible. And it supports us to begin to recognize that these beautiful qualities begin to come along for the ride as we turn to the present moment. I'll just read one more. Let's see. Oh. Oh, maybe two more. This one is a poem about how turning towards suffering creates the conditions for compassion and kindness. And so they're not separate. In fact, you know, kindness is born in contact with as we meet suffering. This is by Naomi Shihab Nye. Many of you may have heard this before, but I never get tired of hearing it. So if you've heard it before, just go along for the ride. Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." And then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. So the present moment offers both challenges and transformation. We have to have the courage to meet those challenges for the transformation to happen. But that is the only place the transformation happens. Doesn't happen anywhere else. And the last section, poem again by Rilke. Truly being here is glorious. Each of you had an hour, or perhaps not even an hour, a barely measurable time between two moments when you were granted a sense of being. Everything. Your veins flowed with being. But we can so easily forget what our laughing neighbor neither confirms nor envies. And so this is our challenge also. Our culture does not support this. Our culture doesn't support this transformation in this way. The culture is churning out greed and aversion. And this is how we learned it. It's why we became this way. It's not in the abstract. It's because of our laughing neighbor. Our whole culture doesn't confirm or envy these moments of transformation. And so it takes courage to go against the stream of that culture. But it is well worth it for the ease, the peace, the joy, the delight, the brokenheartedness that is not contracted when we meet suffering. The ability to respond with generosity, with compassion, with wisdom, with kindness, instead of greed, aversion, and delusion. So if there's a few minutes, if there's any comments or questions.
I'm a big fan of Billy Collins' poetry, and I must say that I have awakened to a new meaning in the one you read this morning. I've read it a number of times. I never saw it as an invitation to mindfulness, but it works. one of the things that seems to work, though, that I hadn't previously thought of as part of mindfulness is playing the Beethoven symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a proactive kind of response to the barking dog.
Indeed.
That starts him on the trail.
Yes.
Or on the path.
Yeah.
To awareness of where the irritation, suffering is taking place.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have a barking dog in my neighborhood, but it barks at night when I'm trying to go to sleep, if I hear it at all. So getting up and playing a Beethoven symphony doesn't seem like the right answer.
Well, you know, the possibility exists. Again, much of the reason why you're kept awake isn't the sound itself. It's the resistance to the sound. And I had an example of this. Pretty recently, I took a family vacation with my family, and I was sharing a room with my sibling, my brother, and he snores pretty loudly. And I thought, okay, you know, resistance is futile, you know. And so I turned my attention to the sound and just stopped fighting it. And within a few minutes, actually, I was asleep. I woke up several times when he, you know, would come and go, but, you know, it's like each time I would just turn my attention to that, and I would go back to sleep. The next morning, he asked me, and I said, oh, yeah, you snored really loudly. And he said, well, what did you do? Because I had first started by trying to put my head under a pillow, and, you know, that was a manifestation of resistance, actually. So it was inclining towards that tightening. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to try to be with this. And I told him what I had done. And I saw him, just a few months ago. Oh, yeah, in August we had another family trip, and I saw him a few months ago, and he said, you know, I've tried that. There's a sound at my house at night that has kept me awake for a long time, and I remembered what you said, and so I tried it, and it worked. turning towards it
mm-hmm.
is really, I think that's really what the poem is pointing to, that we stop, it's the stopping of the resistance. And, you know, the first move of putting on the symphony is an act of resistance. And yet it brought him into the terrain of hearing. And it's like it began to merge with the symphony. And so it allowed, it created conditions for him to be more available. Yeah.
I would recommend, if you haven't read it, Shoveling Snow with the Buddha by Billy Collins.
I'll look at that one.
A couple of things. One is, if I was bothered by a barking dog, I would put on a CD of nature sounds, and then it just would be just one
another nature sound.
Would be one more nature sound among
others.
And
that's an interesting approach too. You know, it's like it reminds you, right? This is nature.
Right.
This is nature.
Right. I even have a CD of wolf howls and jazz, and I just that's I think they're just perfect neutralizers. The other thing is, this is probably a question that would have been much more meaningful to me 5 to 10 years ago than today, but I had to ask, if it's too much effort to take your foot off the gas pedal, can't you just shift into neutral?
Certainly. I mean, okay. Yeah. I mean, that's in a sense, we also have to shift into neutral, you know, to just let the pattern play itself out.
Right.
That is. But you know, but even sometimes shifting into neutral isn't possible, and so we simply have to do the best we can with. Can I be okay that I'm caught by this? You know, there's this anger happening, and yeah, I'm really right here. Okay, there's anger and self-righteousness happening right now. Can I be okay with that? And then perhaps maybe the self-righteousness will fade at some point, and they'll, there's anger. Ooh, oh, and then we can really feel how the anger hurts as the self-righteousness begins to fade. So yeah, so that's the exploration, putting it into neutral.
Kind of the same topic, because I am curious about having aversion to an unpleasant sensation and making it neutral. In my case, I've had a dog, of a neighbor's dog, that barks all the time at everyone, day and night. And I've never cared for dogs my whole life. And I finally realized the only way to address that was loving kindness, was compassion. So I set out to become a dog lover.
Mm.
It's taken months. But now when I run into someone on the street with a dog, I talk to the dog and let him lick me. And when I hear the neighbor's dog, I smile.
Uh-huh.
So I haven't been able to make it neutral,
uh-huh.
But I have made it a nice experience. I was in meditation last week, and there was someone, I think it was one of Gil's beginning meditation exercises, and there was someone brand new who was sniffling. We're in meditation here. Sniffle. 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 You couldn't predict the time. And I first thought, oh, why don't they leave the room? And then I smiled.
Uh-huh.
That happens
so
to
it's,
me.
It's,
that happens to me. So I can't make it neutral.
whatever works to help you be more balanced around it is fine. You know, some minds have more ease in moving towards connection and relationship. It sounds like you actually have some facility with that, with moving towards, I feel, you know, when there's not a connection, that's where I'm reactive, so let me move towards connection, move towards connecting with the dogs, and a sense of, you know, recognizing, sometimes we can recognize, that person must have a little allergy or something, and, you know, they're having some struggle with that, so we can turn towards the connection and feel a sense of connectedness. And in that connectedness, sometimes the reactivity goes, because sometimes the reactivity is because we're feeling disconnected. And so that can support it. And so some minds have that capacity to move towards connection. Some minds don't have that easily available, at least. So, you know, for myself, I often heard, and in fact in the suttas it often talks about using metta as an antidote to aversion. And I tried that, and my aversion was so powerful that it's like, you're just trying to cover me up. You know, that was my response. That was my aversion. That was the aversion's response to trying to turn towards connection. It's like, you're not paying attention to me. And so it strengthened it. And so if that's available for you to move towards metta and, you know, move towards connection, use it. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. I felt like maybe going to metta was cheating or
something. No.
Because for me, it's even in traffic and thing, it's
kind of
easy.
If it's available for you,
yes,
use
it works for me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes. And we need to stop, so thank you.